Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 09-3004, United States of America versus Dwayne McKinney, appellant. Ms. Davis for the appellant, Mr. Bounds for the appellee.
Good morning, Mr. Davis. Good morning. My name is Mary Davis. I am representing the appellant in this case, Dwayne McKinney. With the court's permission, I'd like to save 3 minutes for my rebuttal. The issue I'd like to address this morning is whether the district court should have granted Mr. McKinney a new trial based on the Supreme Court's decision in Indiana v. Edwards, which was decided after the conclusion of the trial but prior to sentencing of Mr. McKinney. After the decision came down, a motion was filed asking that there be a reconsideration of the of Mr. McKinney's request to represent himself. The parties at the court's request gave additional briefing on the issue, and a hearing was held. After much discussion about what the court should be deciding, it was ultimately decided by the trial judge that he would apply basically a Strickland standard as to whether Mr. McKinney was entitled to a new trial. Because of the weight of the evidence, the trial judge felt that it didn't matter who would represent Mr. McKinney. There simply was no way he could ever win the case.
But didn't he also say that Mr. McKinney was not incompetent? I mean,
I think there was agreement by everybody he was competent to stand trial. But as far as competency to represent himself, the judge basically said, based on the reports from the from Butner and from Dr. Kosius, since Mr. McKinney didn't go along with any of the evaluations, didn't take part in anything, there was really no findings as to whether he had any mental illness or not. It was the judge's position, I believe, that he felt that there was something wrong with Mr. McKinney. I think this was something that the judge addressed many times throughout the trial.
But it wasn't in terms of incompetence.
Incompetence to stand trial or incompetence to represent
himself? To represent himself.
I don't think the judge ever thought, during the trial, I don't think he ever thought that far as competence to represent himself. The judge did say, you know, I wish, you know, I had the guidance of the Edwards decision, which the judge was aware was being argued during the course of this trial. And I think everyone felt that there was clearly something wrong with Mr. McKinney. And looking at the record, I think that, I mean, it's obvious there was something wrong with him. We don't have a label.
So under Edwards, the question isn't just whether something's wrong. It has to be a serious mental illness, right? Before the Edwards discretionary change kicks in.
There has to be serious mental illness, although no one has defined what serious mental illness is.
I understand. The psychologist at Butner said he did not have a serious mental illness.
Yeah, that's correct, although there was no evaluation done.
Well, there was an evaluation. He was there for 30 days.
But
So he wouldn't cooperate. But
exactly.
Right. So, but you're not arguing that he should have ordered another one or that the judge should have or somehow forced McKinney to cooperate?
That was tried.
Right. So then, if the Edwards test doesn't kick in until there's serious mental illness, and there's no evidence or insufficient evidence in the record to conclude that there is a serious mental illness, and where one of the psychologists says there isn't, what would you do? Even if Edwards had been decided before the trial, what should the district judge do? Given that circumstance,
I think then that the focus of the court would have been, is Mr. McKinney competent to represent himself? And I don't think the judge would have looked at the weight of the evidence and said, Mr. McKinney, you're going to lose anyway.
Leave that aside for the moment. I'm still fixated on the question of the serious mental illness.
Okay.
So Edwards comes down. Mm-hmm. The judge knows he has discretion if there is a serious mental illness. He has before him a report from Butner, which concludes not a serious mental illness. you may disagree with it, but it did conclude that, right?
It did conclude that.
Okay. And other than that, we have the problem that McKinney didn't cooperate with the others. So what does the judge do at that point?
Well, the judge also had Dr. Kosius' report, who said he did have a mental illness.
He did, but Kosius only didn't even see him.
Right? Oh, he saw him.
He didn't talk to him.
He talked to him briefly. And he went over, and Dr. Kosius went over the same records
right.
that
okay,
Dr.
but Koenig so what is the judge to do at that point?
The judge is supposed to say, okay, I've got these reports. They are not conclusive, and they're, you know, contradictory to each other. Let me look at what the parties say about Mr. McKinney. Let me see what I have seen Mr. McKinney doing in the courtroom.
But in the end, he said, I don't have enough to decide that he has a serious mental illness. What more can he do? You don't think he should be tied down and forced to speak to the psychologist, do you?
No, but I think there was enough in the record for the judge to decide that this trial, the way it took place, given Mr. McKinney's mental instability, his mental illness, I don't know what degree it was, but based on that, it was not a fair trial.
That's a different question. That's not the question that Edwards is giving. That's not the discretion that Edwards is giving to the judge, right? Edwards is not saying, look at the trial afterwards and decide whether he was able to cooperate.
No, it isn't.
Edwards is saying, at the time, you should evaluate whether there's a serious mental illness. And if there is, then you have discretion. I've got that right,
exactly,
right?
Right?
All right. What more can he do? He says he can't conclude that he has a serious mental illness. Is that question, on our review, then, a question of clear error or plain error or what?
I think what this court should do is to remand this case for the judge to decide solely that issue. Would Edwards have made a difference in his decision to allow him to represent himself? And I think what happened during the hearing on the motion for new trial, the judge got caught up into what the evidence was, what the weight of the evidence was.
I understand that. I understand what the problem of that is. But he also said that he couldn't conclude that he had a serious mental illness, right?
Because he was basing his decision solely on Dr. Koenig's report and Dr. Kosius's report. He did not look at what was before him. And I think that's...
Well, we don't know whether he... I mean...
Well, he didn't. I don't believe he mentioned it.
Fair enough. But the district judge... It's reasonable for him to rely on the psychologist rather than his own layman view of how the person performed at trial as to whether he has a mental illness or not.
Not when there's not a complete evaluation. I don't think that's... No, I don't agree.
So
with
he should
that.
he should prefer his own untutored evaluation as compared to the psychologist who also went over the transcript and had him in there for 30 days?
Yes, but there's not just his own, you know, observations of Mr. McKinney. There's also the observations of counsel for both the government and standby counsel for Mr. McKinney, who said, Mr. McKinney, under the law at that time, we have to let him represent himself. But everybody had problems with it. Everybody had problems with his inability to ask questions, to understand the law. He couldn't ask a straightforward question.
What do you think the standard of review here is? McKinney not only didn't object, but insisted on self-representation, right?
That's right.
So why would we not apply the same plain error test that Judge Taha did in the Tenth Circuit case?
Because Mr. McKinney was mentally ill, and I don't think we can hold him to a standard of raising an objection to something that his mental illness caused him to do.
Do you see Edwards as requiring the district court to make a determination on serious mental illness?
I do, yes. I think that's the first step, is that the court has to make a determination whether there is serious mental illness.
You're distinguishing between I can't figure it out and the district court is required to make that determination. If
I think
the question is posed, the district court's got to answer it.
Right. I believe the district court has to answer it.
And then, of course, we're back to what Judge Garland is asking. What do you do in a situation like this where the person, possibly because of the serious mental illness, makes it impossible for anyone to engage in a an evaluation. What do you do?
And again, I get back to my answer to Judge Garland, that you don't look at just the reports. You have to look at what is taking place in front of you. And again, you know, the record in this, I mean, we have just paper here in front of us, but what happened in that courtroom was, and I think Edwards, you know, says this is one of the things you have to consider. What happened in that courtroom was not fair. The jury hated Mr. McKinney from day one. The judge was totally frustrated. The judge at the end of the case said, if I have to retry this case, I think I'll shoot myself. I mean, it was terribly difficult. And it wasn't just because Mr. McKinney wasn't a good lawyer. It was because Mr. McKinney was mentally ill, and there were so many things getting in the way of him being able to represent himself. It went beyond poor lawyering techniques.
In respect to the answer to Judge Edwards about being required to make this evaluation, it's hard to read. I'm having difficulty understanding exactly what Edwards says. So Edwards, and I assume by your nod, So Edwards says that the Constitution permits, it emphasizes the word permits several times, right? The judges to take account of the particular defendant's mental capacities for the purpose of whether he can conduct the trial on his own. Obviously, you're not permitted, you're required to do that for the competency decision to begin with, right? But for this new decision of the Supreme Court, it says permits. So in answer to Judge Edwards' question, you said he's required to determine whether he has a serious mental illness. What if the judge says, look, Edwards says I can, if I want to, take into account mental illness. I don't want to, and I'm not going to. It's up to me. Would that be a violation of Edwards?
I think it would be.
But that you can't draw that from Edwards' words itself. Right,
because I think Edwards has a lot of, I mean, there needs to be a lot of interpretation and further refinement of what Edwards is saying.
So this would be an extension of Edwards.
I believe so. And I think based on the overall language and the reasoning behind Edwards, I think the decision should be that the judge has to make a decision.
Okay. But that so far, that's not what Edwards says. You agree with that?
It doesn't come out and say that.
All right. And let me ask one more question about this. So on the meaning of the competence, which everybody agrees he was competent to stand trial, and I take it, therefore, he was also competent to, for example, plead guilty. That was the previous Supreme Court opinion.
Exactly.
Different standard. So he was competent to make the decision to waive counsel. What he wasn't, just follow on for one second, competent to make the decision to waive counsel, but not necessarily competent to actually represent himself in the trial, right? Okay, so if he's competent to make the decision to waive counsel, the judge advised him, look, this is a stupid thing for you to do, right? The judge went through the whole line of the required statements, correct?
Right.
So he knew that he was making a bad mistake that he was taking a serious risk by going forward, right?
I don't know if he knew it. I don't know if he understood it.
Well, then you're saying something different, right? Then you're saying that he wasn't competent to waive counsel. That's a different question than whether he was competent to represent himself.
My personal opinion is that Mr. McKinney's competency to stand trial was really on the borderline.
Let me put it another way. You're not challenging that.
I'm not challenging that.
Okay, so if he had the competence to waive counsel, to have been advised that he was taking a big risk by doing this, isn't that sort of a different question than the question of whether he was competent to try the case himself? So if you can waive your rights, all kinds of rights, why doesn't he waive? I'm not saying that if Edwards had arrived in time, that this wouldn't make a difference. But him having waived it without the judge applying the Edwards test in the beginning, and everybody at least not challenging the fact that this was a voluntary waiver, why isn't that the end of it?
Because as I think the Edwards decision went into, and as the parties and the government argued, is there, you have to not just end it at that point. You have to look at what's happening. And is Mr. McKinney or the defendant getting a fair trial? And that's what you have to look at. You have to look at the fairness of it. There comes a point where he is not getting a fair trial because he is not competent to represent himself.
But that's not the context in which Edwards came up. Edwards comes up in a context where the state wants to override the right of the defendant to self-represent.
Right.
And the court says the state can override, right?
Correct.
It's not really a case at all about the defendant's right to try with counsel. It's a question of the state's right to override his right to self-represent.
Because that was the issue. That was the issue in Edwards. Right. But I don't think it necessarily is a one-sided, that it's only the, you know, whether the state can override it. I think there comes a point when the court itself can.
That again is the extension of Edwards
and
you're asking about
exactly.
Before. Okay, got it. Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Mr. Bounds?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Ryan Bounds of the United States. As the Court has recognized, there are a couple of anterior questions here. Basically, this case invites the Court both to decide whether to implement the discretion that the Supreme Court recognized in the states to require a higher standard of competency to represent oneself and to invoke Feretta in Indiana versus Edwards. And then the second question is how to implement that. Certainly, the United States' position is that this court should recognize that trial courts, district courts in the federal system have the discretion to require a firmer showing of mental competence in the face of severe mental illness to represent themselves. And so the court would ask this court, the government, excuse me, would ask this court to...
Why? Why does that follow? If you're talking about someone who arguably is not competent to represent himself, how can you demand something of that person when that's precisely the problem? They don't have the capacity. What are they supposed to deliver?
Well, and perhaps I should have phrased that more felicitously. The government's position is that the court should allow district courts to override a defendant's Feretta right in the face of severe mental illness that would undermine their capacity to represent themselves at trial, i.e. the district court should have the discretion to hold defendants who seek to represent themselves to a higher standard, i.e. not to proceed in the face of severe mental illness that would undermine their ability to represent themselves. So that's the threshold.
You can't
question.
Do that without making a finding.
You
cannot do that. The district
Certainly.
Court can't exercise discretion without making a finding with respect
Certainly,
to...
Okay. That's certainly true.
So do we have a finding here?
The district court did not exercise the discretion to force a lawyer on the defendant in this case, so such a finding would not be required in this context.
No, you can't exercise that discretion until you've made a determination with respect to serious mental illness. You don't have a question until there's a resolution of the serious mental illness question. Then the discretion kicks in.
That's a fair formulation.
There's no discretion to just ignore it, at least as I understand. You can't just ignore the question if it's properly raised.
If you have discretion, however, to impose a lawyer on an unwilling defendant, it doesn't necessarily follow that you have an obligation to do so if certain conditions
are met. Is it a matter of an obligation to impose the lawyer is an obligation maybe to answer the question as to whether or not there's a serious mental illness?
Well, there's really no dispute that the court answered the question to the extent possible on the evidence before it in this case. The court specifically recognized that there was an issue.
We're going in circles. Okay. You agreed the court did not answer the question. Now, the district court's reason for that was because the guy was uncooperative. I understand that's a dilemma. I don't know what I would have done on the bench then, but nonetheless, the question's not answered. And how do you hold a defendant who, in fact, may have been seriously mentally ill, how do you hold him to this result, that is, a failure to exercise discretion at all, because you can't figure out what to do when that person may be mentally incompetent to represent himself?
I would submit to the court that it's probably an aggressive reading of the record in this case just to hold that the district court did not answer the question of whether this defendant was so severely mentally ill as to be unable as a result to represent himself. The court in fact said that there was insufficient evidence of severe mental illness to make that finding, and that is in and of itself a finding. And furthermore, the court specifically said when the
defendant... Finding that I can't do it.
No, that there's insufficient evidence, i.e. there's not a burden. The burden to find the the threshold question of whether the defendant was severely mentally ill to the extent that he couldn't represent himself was not met. There was not sufficient evidence. That's the sort of question that courts answer all the time, and that is a resolution of the question.
And who carries that burden?
To the extent that the defendant is here challenging his conviction, it would be the defendant.
The defendant at trial who's potentially seriously mentally ill has the burden to show that he's seriously mentally ill. That makes no sense. And he has no counsel.
To the extent that the defendant...
I mean, we have an underlying problem here. There is a constitutional right to counsel.
Certainly.
Okay? That's guaranteed.
Of course.
So we're in that box. We're in that quandary. And you're saying the burden is on the defendant, who may not be mentally competent to do it, without the assistance of counsel.
The defendant.
That's here, a problem I have with Judge... Just so I finish up with Judge Garland's questions about the waiver. Mm-hmm. How can you meaningfully waiver without counsel if you're not mentally competent to represent yourself? And you have no assistance of counsel. Let me just tell you where I'm getting back to. So in these weird circumstances, should we not require the district court judge, however it's to be done, to make the finding?
To the extent that it is necessary to dispose of the question, and it was arguably raised here, whether the defendant was so severely mentally ill that he could not represent himself.
Right.
The district court has to make a finding, and the district court here did make a finding.
So you're arguing did make a finding.
And just to be clear, the defendant was represented both when he waived his right and invoked Feretta, and when he challenged his conviction based on his alleged incompetence. And the district court said there was no evidence sufficient to make a finding that he was so severely mentally ill he could not represent himself. And in addition, the defendant was...
I mean, you stated it in a way that's causing me the problem. No evidence sufficient to make a finding. I mean, that seems to me...
It's very important, though.
I don't know whether it's an extension of Edwards, but it's an oddball result, given what Edwards says, it seems to me.
For the district court
to simply walk away from it and say, with respect to someone, and this is not a case where this guy was playing. Based on everything we can read and hear, this guy had some problems, whatever they were. Sufficient that a district court, one would think, has to decide, seriously mentally ill to represent himself or not.
This gentleman certainly indicated some problems. The district court also appreciated that this gentleman had perpetrated a fraud resulting in hundreds of thousands of dollars of gains to himself on a number of victims. And this defendant interposed his alleged maladies just after 3 days of government witnesses' testimony in order to suspend the proceedings after most of the government's witnesses had testified. And even though he had already appreciated that he may have this claim of mental illness and told his lawyer while he was still represented that he did not want to raise this with the district court, specifically for the strategic reason he did not want to draw out the proceedings, because he thought, as the district court found, he could pull one over on the jury. So, but your question is a good one, and it raises the second issue. If we're going to implement in this district, in this circuit, the Indiana versus Edwards discretion on the part of district judges, how does that look? And here we're in a bit of an odd position because this case arises after conviction. And so the defense is asking this court to overturn a conviction based on an unfairness that unfolded over the course of trial. But of course, Feretta, which is in no way undermined by Indiana versus Edwards, held that sort of retrospective analysis is simply unavailable. And so this entire proceeding as to what the standard of review should be based on the trial proceedings is inapposite. And so your question, Judge Edwards, is really a question that should not, in fact, arise in the first instance. And it only arises here because of the strange timing of the Indiana versus Edwards decision. The government would submit that it's important for the district courts to exercise their discretion to impose on...
Edwards says the question that Edwards talks about cannot be raised retrospectively?
Exactly. It can be raised only in the extent to which the government seeks a reversal or it can be only raised in circumstances that are not present here, and they would be rare circumstances indeed, where a defendant has attempted to retract perhaps a Feretta waiver or somehow has put this before the court at the outset of proceedings. Certainly it is not to be evaluated on the context of the subsequent proceedings, throughout the course of which the defendant insisted on representing himself, as was his right under the Sixth Amendment and under Feretta.
Judge Edwards was, I think, suggesting taking a look at the Ninth Circuit's remand approach. That is, Judge Edwards saying that the district court should be required to make the finding. What's wrong with the Ninth Circuit's approach? That is, to remand to require the district court to make a finding and then to determine whether to exercise the discretion granted by Edwards or not.
Well, it's simply inapposite.
In this case, I mean the opinion Edwards, not the Judge Edwards.
Right, of course. In this case, it's inapposite because the district court did have the benefit of Edwards, did specifically and perhaps fortuitously appreciate that there was a separate, discrete question as to whether the defendant was competent to represent himself, to waive counsel and to represent himself, specifically solicited an opinion from the forensic psychologist at FCI Butner. Is this defendant competent to waive counsel and represent himself? Got an answer to that question. That answer was this defendant is not acting consistently with severe mental illness and is competent to proceed. Dr. Koshes, the defendant's own expert, said the defendant, in the context of representing himself, was, quote, competent to participate in these proceedings. And so there was...
But Koshes didn't address the question that we have before us, whether he was competent to represent himself.
Well, his opinion was solicited specifically in the context of a defendant who was representing himself, and it was, and his opinion was rendered after reviewing the opinion of Dr. Koenig from FCI.
So you're saying when he says to participate in the proceedings, you're interpreting that as meaning to represent himself?
Yes, Your Honor.
But we don't have any more about that than those words, right?
It is ambiguous, but in the context, the meaning is unmistakable. Certainly, certainly Dr. Koshes was not saying that this defendant suffered from a severe mental illness that precluded him from representing himself. Whatever ambiguity there may be, that is not an ambiguity that that lends itself to a reading so extreme as that one. So in this case, the district court was making a decision after Indiana versus Edwards.
You're saying if we send it back down, the judge will just confirm what you're saying, and that'll be the end of it. Right? So the government isn't injured by this approach at all. You're very confident that you know what the judge did, and if we're not confident, if we're not confident, then if we do that, the judge will verify what you said, and that'll be the end of it. What's the injury to the government?
Certainly, there's no grave injury to the government, but there is an interest in a finality of proceedings and in precluding defendants as a general matter in implementing.
Well, we're not going to have this problem again because Edwards, the opinion, not the judge, has been decided. So we're not going to have a mid-trial problem like this again. So for this one case, why not send it back?
Well, I'm not entirely sure that because this is the first case to come up and it's and Indiana versus Edwards was decided in the middle of it that there's not going to be any subsequent cases.
Well, what I'm saying, look, you are the United States. You represent the United States Attorney's Office. Presumably you know whether there are other trials where mid-trial Edwards came down or just at the end of it. Are there any?
I do not know the answer to that question. We can certainly report back to the court if the court would like us to answer that question.
No, I mean, you ought to tell counsel in those cases, make sure you get a decision from the district court judge.
Well, by now it's probably a little late to get that decision.
Well, we don't have that many trials in this courthouse, and we don't have very many self-representation trials in this courthouse. So whatever it is, it's a pretty small number, isn't it?
Fair enough. And if the court were to elect to remand this case for the district judge to make an explicit conclusion and finding, that would not be a grave injustice. But I would urge the court in doing so to make clear that these sort of retrospective challenges based on putative unfairness are not to be raised in Feretta cases. And that is what's happening here, quite contrary to this court's precedent and to Feretta's logic, that this defendant is coming into this court and asking his conviction be overturned based on the quality of his own defense.
You're
and the punitive unfairness
that results in the Feretta question with a question with respect to someone who may be mentally incompetent to represent himself. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. If in fact you have someone who is mentally unable to represent himself, the Feretta question can't be used as a hammer to ignore that. That makes no sense whatsoever.
The court, I
hear you about what Feretta says, but I'm thinking about the person who can't represent himself, mentally unable to represent
himself. That person has a right to represent himself. The district court and the government have an interest that may counter.
But he also has
right.
a right for the if the question is raised, which it was here, for the district court to answer it.
And that I think is not correct. The defendant does not have a right.
Get an answer to the question?
The defendant does not have a right to the district court's exercise of that discretion.
To answer the question as to whether or not you're, because then we can judge the district court's, the discretion is not unfettered. The district court can abuse its discretion.
Certainly.
I mean, if someone is stark raving mad, and there's no doubt, and no one would be the least bit confused, I think the defendant could win under Edwards by saying it was an abuse of discretion to let me keep going forward. I don't think you're going to present that case and think you're going to win it.
Certainly in extreme circumstances, far from the circumstances of this case.
It's not my counsel. Come on. You don't have to do it. I understand what this case is. We're trying to figure out how to write this thing.
Very well. Very well. So for purposes of the outcome of this case, the government certainly acknowledges that it would be within this court's authority to remand the case and ask the district court to make an explicit conclusion although there's really no evidentiary basis, so it's somewhat a little bit unclear as to what further evidence the court would have before it in order to make a retrospective, evidence-based determination of the severe mental illness of this defendant at the time of his trial proceedings.
So your view would be that it would be clear error then?
Well, certainly a clear error.
If we sent it back and the district court said there was a serious mental illness, you would say clear error?
It's not clear in this case how the district court could make that finding. The district court has explicitly addressed this question and said the evidence before it at the time was insufficient to make that finding.
And that's a different answer than the one we're trying to get.
And so the question is, how would the district court make that conclusion without getting additional evidence, and how could that additional evidence be rendered in a way that would be relevant to the defendant's mental state 2 years ago?
It would clearly have to be, even the Ninth Circuit's opinion would have to be what his mental state was 2 years ago, right?
Well, yes, and the Ninth Circuit's opinion, to be clear, was less about the evidence and more about the district court's exercise of discretion once the district court was apprised that it had that discretion. Here, the district court knew that it had, or assumed that it had the discretion, and simply did not have the evidence before it to exercise the discretion in the way that the defendant thinks he was entitled to have it exercised. And it's unclear what a remand would accomplish where we are now 2 years on and the evidence would have to relate to his competence and severe mental illness or lack thereof back in 2008 when he was being tried. So it's not clear that there would be much to accomplish with a remand, and certainly the government would...
So it would depend on what the district court said, whether there was clear error, I take it. I mean, you're not saying it's impossible for him to reach that result, just that you can't vision how he would, and I guess you could challenge his district court's reasoning.
It's not impossible, Your Honor. However, in light of the circumstances of this case, the evidence before the court and the standard of review, which on the factual issue of a severe mental illness was clear error, this court should affirm the conviction of the defendant for the reasons stated in our brief.
You suggested, let me make sure I understood you, that Edwards says you can't make a retrospective determination. We can't find that.
Ferretta,
I know what Ferretta says, and I'm telling you, I think there's a disjunction between the two in a case in which you have someone who is mentally incompetent to represent himself. Edwards does not say you cannot make a retrospective determination.
It would be an...
Edwards doesn't say that, right?
It certainly does not,
okay.
But as...
You misspoke. You said, Edward said that when we had our, I wrote it down immediately
okay.
Because I did not recall that.
I apologize. What I meant to say is that Edward says nothing to suggest that it's overruling Ferretta on that issue. And it would be beyond this court's normal decision-making authority to read Ferretta to be overturned sub silentio by a subsequent decision.
I don't think it's an overturning is what I'm telling you. They're different questions.
Well, anyway, the government would seek an affirmance of this appellant's conviction, and if there are no further questions.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Does Ms. Davis have any time?
Ms. Davis, did that have any
time? All right, why don't you take a minute?
If I could ask you just to follow along the progression that you just heard. If we were to remand, what do you think should happen on remand?
What do I think will happen?
No, not that would be great if we could all make that judgment.
Yeah.
No, what should happen? That is, what happens if the judge says the same thing he said before, but makes clear that he's, let's assume the judge says it the way you think he said it before, namely, I looked at everything and I can't there's insufficient evidence for me to conclude that he's seriously mentally ill. What happens then?
I don't think the judge would say that. I think the judge would make a decision one way or the other. I think what happened the first time around is the judge said, I can't make that decision. I don't really know, you know, but I'm going to have to look at the weight of the evidence, and because of that, I don't have to make this decision. I think if this were remanded solely for that question, I think the judge would make a decision one way or another based on everything before the court.
What if he were unable to? What if he were just unable to? He has before him the psychologist from Butner who says not seriously mentally ill. He has the other guy who's got who's sort of ambiguous about what he's deciding. He's seen the trial, and he says to himself, I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist. I can't make a layperson's judgment. If the judge is unable to make that decision, does that mean he has to conclude that there is serious mental illness?
I think he would, yes.
He would have to.
Yes, because I think you have to protect the rights of the defendant over the rights of the government to try a case and to keep a conviction. And if there's some question in the judge's mind as to whether Mr. McKinney is seriously mentally ill, I think that he would have to grant him a new trial with counsel.
That's a serious extension of Edwards, right? Edwards says if the judge finds that there's a serious mental illness, then the judge may deny self-representation. And now you're saying that if the judge can't tell whether there's a serious mental illness, then he has to deny self-representation.
Well, let me back up. Maybe I misspoke. I think if the judge has to make a decision and he's saying, based on this, I can't tell if there's serious mental illness, he would have to conclude, yes, there is serious mental illness. Then he would have to, in his discretion, decide whether there should be a new trial.
But he would have discretion to do that.
To decide whether there should, right, and I think that's what Edwards says.
Right, but so we are weighing two different rights here, and at least until Edwards, and even in Edwards, the court stressed the significance of the right to represent yourself. This would, where you're going, would reduce that right, not only for people who are seriously mentally ill, but for people who it's unclear whether they're seriously mentally ill, right?
Right.
All right, any questions? All right. No. You were appointed to represent the defendant. We thank you for your assistance.
Okay, thank you very much.
Very good.
You call the next case.